I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome, everyone, to the PFF Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, John Macri, Fantasy Analyst here at PFF, and I am joined by PFF's lead Fantasy Analyst, the great Nathan Yonke. Nate, we're back at it, live again for tomorrow, for another morning podcast to get the good people ready for week three. So how are you feeling today?
I'm doing fine. Excited to see that there's some big names on the waiver wire. Just wish it didn't take injuries for this to happen. It was a pretty disappointing two games last night with some of the injuries that we had.
Yeah. We'll definitely get into that. It was a major bummer with one of the big injuries, obviously Nick Chubb, and we'll talk about that here in a sec. But yeah, you mentioned it, Monday Night Football. We had a couple games going last night. So let's do a quick recap of those, because we did a big recap yesterday for the rest of the week two games. So we may as well continue that here before we get into the waiver wire targets and start with New Orleans, Carolina. So the Saints take it 20-17. So another not great game for Bryce Young. I think he'll likely have a passing grade in the 50s once the grades lock today. But just 2 weeks into his young NFL career, so nothing to really panic over yet. But hard to kind of get too excited about the receiving options on the Panthers right now when Young has now passed for, I think, fewer than 160 yards in both games so far. So, Nate, going through the Panthers side of the ball first, what was the first thing that kind of stood out to you with this offense?
The big thing for me looking at usage was DJ Chark coming back from injury. He was out most of the preseason and week one with the hamstring injury. So good to see him back on the field. He took over the third wide receiver job. They spent almost the entire game in 11 personnel. So didn't really get a chance to see what they would have done in 12 personnel. But Chark on the field often. He did get substituted out a decent amount for Terrace Marshall. It'll be pretty interesting to see how much that continues going forward, just with Marshall being a young player with some promise. But they did invest a decent amount of money in Chark for this season, so it'll be interesting to see if Chark's offensive snaps increase over the season once he's closer to 100%, or if this is just the new normal for him in which he's playing a little bit less than he was playing in Detroit most of the time when he was healthy there. But he only saw the one target for 15 yards. It was Adam Thielen and Jonathan Mingo seeing basically all of the targets in this game. So even though the offense isn't doing that well in general, still generally happy to have Mingo and Thielen on my bench for now, just in case things start to improve as the season progresses, which we would expect it to, because this is a new coaching staff, new quarterback, three new wide receivers, new running back, new tight end. It's a bunch of new working parts going together, trying to start something new. So it would be nice to see if they were doing better, but it's certainly not time to panic at this point.
Yeah, it makes sense. And yeah, we'll kind of wait and see on pretty much this entire Panthers offense. But what about the backfield? I know Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard, it was kind of a clear split last week in how those guys were utilized. So how did that look like this week? Did it change at all? Was it about the same for Carolina?
Yeah, it was pretty much the same as it was. We saw Sanders continue to dominate early downs, Hubbard dominate late downs. The big thing that was kind of interesting to see in week one is that Hubbard was often the short yardage back, but they just didn't really get into short yardage situations in this game at any point, which is probably a problem for the offense. But because we didn't see that, we didn't see Hubbard get as many carries in this game, but would expect him to continue to be the short yardage back going forward. So expect him to be running the ball a little bit more, but still hopeful for Sanders over the course of the season. It just, the offense in general needs to play better so that he can play better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then on the Saints side, Derek Carr doesn't throw any touchdowns. He had just one last week. So we know the weapons are here in the offense. It just hasn't translated to receiving touchdowns yet or passing touchdowns. But instead, it was actually running back Tony Jones who punched in a couple of touchdowns for the Saints. So let's start with the backfield there. What happened here to lead Tony Jones into becoming the RB1 for the Saints in week two?
Sure, it took a lot of steps. We're still at the point where Alvin Kamara is suspended for 3 total games, so he will be suspended for 1 more game after this point. Jamal Williams was the starting running back, but Kendre Miller also dealing with a hamstring injury, limited in practice all week, so it wasn't all that surprising that Miller did not play. So Tony Jones, the running back off the practice squad, was brought up from the practice squad for this game to be the backup running back. The Saints, most teams end up having 3 running backs healthy on game and active on game day. The Saints, this was kind of a rare exception for a team to only have 2 running backs active. Part of that's because they have Taysom Hill on the roster, so he is capable of playing running back, so that certainly helps. So after Williams got injured early second quarter with the injury, it was Tony Jones at running back for the rest of the game. The big thing for the Saints in general is we saw Taysom Hill get more involved in the offense in general. That was happening before the Williams injury happened. He started the game at lined up as a wide receiver, was taking snaps at quarterback at times before Williams got injured. Hill, both with Derek Carr on the field and Derek Carr off the field. So they definitely had a package for him. Even when Williams went down, it was mostly Jones at running back with Hill seeing almost all of his opportunities at other positions. We did, near the very end of the game, see a little bit of Hill lined up as a running back, but it was mostly Jones. So they do have a favorable matchup against the Packers next week, so it will be good to pay attention to how serious this injury is. As of us doing this, I don't think we have an update on how healthy Williams is, if he's at risk of missing next week or multiple weeks or not. So ideally, we find out sometime today. If he is out, Kendre Miller would be the top option. Hopefully, he is healthy. But if not, then it's Tony Jones. So they do have Jordan Mims on the practice squad to be the backup if they need him. But he was with the Bills in the preseason and barely saw any snaps with Buffalo. So really haven't seen much out of Mims to this point. So it's Miller if he's healthy. It's Williams if he's healthy. If not, it's Miller if he's healthy. If not, it's Jones.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of steps there to get to Tony Jones, but here we are, probably worth a speculative ad at some point, if just kind of paying attention to the practice reports this week to see who is healthy, who is not. But let's move on to the Browns and the Steelers. Pittsburgh squeaks out a win here against the Browns, but unfortunately, Nick Chubb suffers a horrific knee injury that is going to cost him his season. Obviously hate this for Chubb and hope he gets well soon, but we do have to cover the fantasy implications of this because Nick Chubb, obviously being one of the biggest top fantasy assets for 2023 and on every roster. So, Nate, with Chubb done for the year, what are we looking at here with the Browns backfield?
Fair. Even though this is a fantasy podcast, I can at least take like 30 seconds to go at the human aspect of it. And just hearing that he was ruled out immediately, they said, don't watch the replay. Even ESPN didn't have the replay of the injury, which speaks to how severe it was. Seeing the outpouring of support for him on social media immediately afterwards from basically every big name running back in the NFL, as well as several other players, several people that have covered him throughout his career. Definitely hope he's able to recover, but he's been arguably the best runner that we've seen over the past 5-10 years. Even if he is able to return to playing football, I don't know if we're ever going to see him at the same level he was. So that's pretty disappointing thing to know. But hopefully Chubb is able to recover from this and able to bounce back. So I know we are rooting for him and everyone else is also rooting for him. From a fantasy perspective, it was Jerome Ford who took over for most of the rest of the game, which was to be expected. The primary running back in basically every situation. The only real notable exception to that is the goal line situations where Pierre Strong took 3 snaps to 2 by Ford. But that could also very well be explained by the fact that Ford had had a 69-yard run prior to those three goal line plays that Pierre Strong was in for, two of them being before scoring and then the two-point conversion attempt. So it wouldn't be surprising to see Ford take the majority of those snaps going forward. Strong is a slightly larger running back, so there's a chance that he will be used a little bit more at the goal line, but he also was not used in short yardage situations at any other point in this game. So that's a pretty good sign for Ford. This makes Ford jumping ahead slightly the top running back option this week in terms of, and potentially the top overall option as well. The only concern is if they do bring in another running back, it just seems like it makes too much sense not to bring back Kareem Hunt, even if he's not playing as well as he once was. Just his familiarity with the offense already and the players on the team. Ford, I still think, should be the starter, even if Hunt is added to the team. I still think Ford is probably the top fantasy option, even if we find out today that Hunt's on the team. But it could complicate things further. But without any other running back, Ford probably a decent top 20 fantasy running back over the rest of the season, someone you want to be starting each week. If they do add Hunt, then it'll probably more be a matchup-based thing, but it's also possible that they add Hunt and he is only a backup in case of emergency or when Ford needs a break. So even if they do add him, we could still see Ford as a potential top 20 fantasy running back the rest of the way.
Yeah, I'm with you. We were talking about waivers today, and I think Jerome Ford, at least for me, would be the top guy. He looked good last night, you know, when he came in for Nick Chubb, and obviously that offensive line too blocks really well. One of the best run blocking units in the league there. So you like to see that for anybody that is able to get Jerome Ford on their roster this week. And yeah, I'm with you, absolutely starting him. But Kareem Hunt would be the one I think, yeah, that makes the most sense to kind of keep an eye out for in free agency. Other things in this game. Amari Cooper was unlikely to play. He did play. He brought in 7 catches for 90 yards. So that unlikely thing turned into actually a pretty decent workload for him. He led the team there in receiving yards. Was he a full go in this game, or was he limited at all like we saw last week?
He was a little limited. It was definitely a weird situation where on Sunday, the reports were that he is unlikely to play, and that almost always means when Schefter or Ian Rappaport are using the words unlikely to play, that almost always means that they don't end up playing. So I took him out of my rankings completely, but he did end up playing, and he played significantly, roughly 75% of the offensive snaps. The big thing is they did substitute him out a little bit more than usual and more run situations, but it was interesting to see them use a 10 personnel grouping in this game, which is one running back, no tight ends. And it was always Donovan Peoples-Jones, Elijah Moore, Cedric Tillman, and Marquise Goodwin as the 4 wide receivers when they use this personnel grouping, and Cooper was not on the field for it. So those are definitely more pass formations have the 4 wide receivers on the field. So there were definitely pass plays where Cooper was not on the field in this game. Would expect him to bounce back in terms of offensive snaps. It wasn't an overly significant amount by any means, though. And he did lead the team in receptions, targets, and receiving yards. So despite the injury, he was able to have a pretty successful game.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was a nice game for him. The rest of the Browns offense, maybe not so much outside of Jerome Ford, but we don't need to spend too much time there. Deshaun Watson continues to kind of struggle, obviously, and hopefully that turns around. Otherwise, he was somebody that people invested heavily in drafts this season. He was a top 10 quarterback, but hasn't really played like that so far. So that bounce back still hasn't quite happened for Deshaun Watson. But on the Steelers side, Deontay Johnson lands on IR. So they were down their top wide receiver. What did the Steelers wide receiver room look like with Deontay Johnson out of the lineup?
Sure. So Johnson out for the next couple games. We did see a significant amount of time of Johnson being out last week, and we saw Calvin Austin take over as that outside wide receiver. Now that they had a week of planning, we did see his role change slightly in this game. We know he is probably best suited to play slot receiver, but they have Allen Robinson as their primary slot receiver. We did see a number of snaps where Austin was in the slot, Robinson out wide, so they were able to mix things up and put Austin in a little bit better position for him, even though Robinson remained the primary slot receiver. We've also seen over the last several years now, Pittsburgh and 12 personnel likes to rotate their wide receivers in and out a little bit just to give them a little rest. So they've typically done that with their top three receivers. That did happen in this game. We did see Calvin Austin play significantly in 12 personnel. It wasn't just George Pickens and Allen Robinson as the clear two starters. Austin was a very close third. So in terms of playing time, that was great to see. But in terms of replacing Johnson's production, it was Pickens seeing a lot of the targets in this game. He caught a couple very nice passes, and that led him to lead the team in receiving. So while Austin did replace him in terms of playing time, I think Austin is an intriguing dynasty option. I think someone that could start to play better as the season progresses, considering this is his first season after missing all of last year with injury. But I'm probably not considering starting Austin anytime soon. I think it'll continue to be George Pickens that benefits the most out of Deontay Johnson not playing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that makes perfect sense. And then the other thing coming out of the Steelers offense here was more of the Jaylen Warren versus Najee Harris saga. Najee Harris, not very effective with his touches. People were calling for his head on Twitter, but especially with Jaylen Warren popping off a couple nice big runs and obviously putting in some good work in the receiving game. So Jaylen Warren versus Najee Harris, what did that look like this week as far as usage goes? Are we getting more Jaylen Warren than we've been used to?
We are getting more Warren. He is inching closer and closer to being at 50%. It was pretty close to 50-50 at one point in the game, but later when the Steelers had the lead, it was a little bit more Najee Harris. So almost the closest that we've seen to 50-50. It was just one game last year where Warren actually played more snaps than Harris, but that was a blowout loss. So it makes sense with Warren being the receiving back that he would see more snaps in that game. But this is the closest that we've probably seen to 50-50. In a game that the game script has been relatively close throughout the game. So Harris did end up being the more successful runner, had 43 yards on 10 carries. So a pretty decent average yards per carry. Warren only had 20 yards on 6 carries. So Harris was the better runner in this game. But in terms of fantasy production, Warren more than made up for it as his work as a receiver. 66 receiving yards on 4 receptions. Where Harris didn't have any receiving yards. He did catch one pass, though. So I think everything that the coaching staff has been saying, everything that a lot of us have been expecting, is that this will continue to inch closer and closer to 50-50. But I do think Harris, having a decent game in the run game, will probably keep these roles fairly similar, of Harris seeing most of the work on early downs, but Warren still mixing in at times, and then Warren taking the passing down work.
Perfect. Anything else from these games here that we should cover before we move on to the waiver targets?
Just one thing, Pat Freiermuth, he's had 3 straight bad games dating back to last season, caught 2 passes for 5 yards over his last 3 games. So his playing time hasn't really been impacted all that much. It was a little bit lower last week, but it bounced back in a decent way this week. So I'm not sure why he's not getting thrown the ball at this point, but it's at least worth monitoring. And if you have him on your roster and he's the only tight end on your roster, I'd probably be looking to add a second option just in case this trend continues.
There we go. All right. We're going to go through our week 3 waiver targets by position in just a minute. But before we do, I want to give a quick shout out to our presenting sponsor, Fabric by Gerber Life. Fall is all about the back to school and back to routine checklist, and the most important task on that list should be securing your family's financial future, starting with life insurance. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it quick, easy, and affordable to protect your family so you can get back to enjoying life. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than $1 a day. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/fantasy. That's meetfabric.com/fantasy. meetfabric.com/fantasy. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, so we're going to go through our waiver targets here, and let's start at the top, which we always do at the quarterbacks. I'll list them off and what their roster ship percentage currently is over on ESPN, and we'll discuss why they're worth adding in your fantasy leagues, obviously, as well. So starting with the first name on the list, the QB3 overall in most leagues, Jordan Love, the Green Bay Packers, rostered in just 39.6% of fantasy leagues. There's also Sam Howell of the Washington Commanders, rostered in just 9.5% of leagues. And then you've also added Derek Carr, Kenny Pickett, and CJ Stroud. So who do you want to talk about here among the quarterbacks, Nate?
We can at least briefly talk about Love, even though we talked about him a bit on the podcast, recap podcast yesterday. He's just been an intriguing player in that he keeps scoring three touchdowns, even though he hasn't graded all that well. His completion percentage and yards haven't been great so far this season, but he's done this without Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs playing in a part-time role at this point as he's continues to recover from his injury. Didn't have David Bakhtiari last week, didn't have Aaron Jones last week, didn't have Elgton Jenkins last week, all former Pro Bowl players, so that he's been without a lot of the players that should be helping him succeed. So I just don't know what Love will end up doing once he has all of his weapons, if he'll be able to improve his PFF grade and continue to build up and have more yards, have more completions than he's currently having, or if this is just what we'll continue to see out of Love. So it's intriguing enough to me to want to add him as a backup option, but I'm probably still not putting him in my starting lineup until I can see him get at least 200, 300 yards in a game at some point.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, it's he might be like a nice kind of matchup based QB streamer, and we've pointed him out this that way in a couple articles the past 2 weeks as well. But yeah, it's harder. He's facing the Saints defense in week three, I believe, which is a little bit of a tougher matchup, so maybe not ideal there. But like you said, could potentially get Christian Watson back, David Bakhtiari, some of the key pieces in that offense. So there's still potential there for Jordan Love. So I think he absolutely should be rostered, and then kind of on a weekly basis, kind of looking at matchups there. But who else among the quarterbacks was a key one for you here?
I think Sam Howell is the big one, just because we've talked about him a bit in the offseason of his potential. And even though he hasn't been running as much, he probably had his best game as a pro this past week, at least in terms of box score stats, 27 of 39, 299 yards, two touchdowns. Did that despite losing his tight end decently early in the game in Logan Thomas. I think with the new offensive coordinator, it's still a little bit of a work in progress. I think even though Washington has been winning, we expect the offense is capable of doing even better this season. So top 10 so far this year in terms of passing yards, I expect him to continue being able to put up good numbers, especially because I expect a lot of close games where Washington will need to be passing the ball a lot. So ideally, we start to see him run a little bit more to fully unlock his fantasy potential, but he's available in over 90% of ESPN leagues. So I think out of all of the guys that are widely available, he's definitely the best option.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. We talked about him a lot this offseason, but yeah, there's still that rushing potential that hasn't been unlocked. We saw him kind of scramble for a touchdown as well, but he's got the weapons in that offense to potentially help him. Eric Bieniemy, obviously, running things over there. So there's room for this Washington offense, Sam Howell specifically, to kind of improve. And right now he's a top 10 fantasy quarterback in most leagues too. So there's a lot to like about, I think, Sam Howell and this Washington offense still. Some very encouraging stuff early in the year. Among the other names that we mentioned, Derek Carr, Kenny Pickett, CJ Stroud, any of those guys that you are particularly interested in heading into this week?
This is probably the most interested I've been in CJ Stroud to this point. Just with Houston being down in games a lot, they have no problem throwing the ball a ton and having a pretty quick pace in their offense, which allows them to run a lot of plays. So Stroud, 30 of 47 passes for 384 yards and two touchdowns. So it doesn't always have to be pretty, but if he's throwing that many passes, he's going to have a lot of yards. And with how well some of his young wide receiver weapons have been doing, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, that only helps his potential fantasy production going forward. So again, I don't know there's many quarterbacks that I'm trying to pick up specifically for this upcoming week, but just a lot of younger quarterbacks that I think have the potential to build on what they're doing right now and potentially be fantasy starters over the second half of the season.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. Stroud is the one for me as well. And just like you said, it's that volume, right? The passing volume is there for this offense. So even if, you know, he's not perfect and the most doesn't really live up to that number two overall pick right away, he still has that potential within him. And he has the offensive weapons there as well that are kind of emerging, the Tank Dells and Nico Collins of the world. So there's, again, more potential here for the Houston Texans offense. I'm with you on CJ Stroud. I don't mind adding him to rosters and then potentially streaming him in decent matchups as well. So nice call there. Let's go to the running back position. So I'll list off just a few here to start, and then we'll look at the rest. But obviously, Jerome Ford at the top here. We mentioned him early on. He is currently rostered in 8.9% of ESPN leagues. I imagine that number is going to jump up dramatically this week, and he won't be on the waiver wire next week. So make sure to get your Jerome Ford shares. And now, Zach Moss is the other big one of the Indianapolis Colts, rostered in 29.5% of ESPN leagues. And a couple of Ravens running backs, Justice Hill, Gus Edwards, both hovering around 30% rostership percentage. So talking about these top four guys, Nate, which one's kind of, obviously Jerome Ford and Zach Moss stand out to you, but maybe touch on them a little bit more.
Yeah, I think Ford, since we touched on at the start of the show, I don't think I have too much more to say on him. Just I think he's going to potentially be a top 20 running back going forward. So he's definitely by a distance the top option. I think Zach Moss is potentially there, just with Jonathan Taylor's situation looming. That means Zach Moss could be a great option for one or two more weeks, or he could be a great option for the rest of the season, where we can expect Jerome Ford to still be the starting fantasy running back for Cleveland over the rest of the season. So that's why he's so far ahead. But Moss, we did see him play 56 of 57 offensive snaps this past week, which is excellent for any running back. Definitely puts him in the fantasy starter category. And if he continues to see this dominant amount of playing time, then he probably needs to be in your fantasy starting lineup. We can probably expect this to continue at least for this week and for one more week. But then Jonathan Taylor is eligible to return, and we haven't really gotten that many updates from that situation recently. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that situation. There's a bit of teams potentially looking for running backs. There's the Rams, who are looking to trade Cam Akers as well. So a running back could be joining Indianapolis. We don't know if a running back will end up going to Cleveland. So there's definitely going to be changes that happen. So Moss is definitely one of the people who could be negatively affected by a trade or a free agent target. But for the time being, pick up Moss, and I would definitely expect him to be a top 24 fantasy running back at least next week.
Yeah, I like that. And yeah, I have a weird feeling about the Jonathan Taylor situation. Like, it doesn't feel like he's immediately going to come back and step right back into his every down role if he is staying on the Colts, right? So it just feels like one of those situations to kind of just be cautious with. And in the meantime, like you said, Zach Moss is a great option to kind of pick up off the waiver wire and plug into lineups, and could potentially last even longer than the next 2 weeks or so, as long as they don't bring anybody else in. So, we did talk about the Ravens running backs quite a bit last week, and then we touched on them in the recap episode, talking about the split there. But there were a few more running backs that you mentioned in the waiver wire article. Jaylen Warren was one of them as well, and we kind of touched on him already. But also Roschon Johnson of the Chicago Bears, Craig Reynolds of the Detroit Lions, Matt Breida of the New York Giants, Tyjae Spears of the Tennessee Titans, and Sean Tucker of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The most rostered ones in that group are Jaylen Warren at 40% and Roschon Johnson at 29%, but everybody else kind of hovering below 10% for the most part. Tyjae Spears has been a little bit more rostered recently, but amongst this group, Saquon Barkley is expected to miss 3 weeks. So maybe we should start with Matt Breida in the Giants.
I think so as well. We did see Barkley play almost every snap last week. So in the article, I didn't even have the chart for the week 2 usage because it wasn't helpful. I went all the way back to week 1, where we saw Matt Breida see a little bit more playing time than Gary Brightwell on early downs, a bit more offensive snaps on third down. So I fully expect Breida to see over 50% of offensive snaps over these next couple weeks. I do think Gary Brightwell will be involved in the offense too. So I don't think this is going to be a situation like Indianapolis where we all of a sudden see Breida play just as much as Saquon Barkley was playing. I do think this will be a two-man committee, but I think Breida will be the man leading this committee, both on early downs and passing downs. So that's a good amount of usage for him. It'll just be what matchups you're okay starting him in. They play San Francisco this week, so it's not the best option if you're looking for a running back this upcoming week, but we do expect Barkley to miss a couple of games at this point. So Breida is someone who, even if he's not starting in your fantasy lineup this week, it might make sense to put him in your lineup next week or the week after.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Not a great matchup this week, although we did see Kyren Williams put up an RB1 performance against the 49ers, surprisingly. So maybe there's at least a hope there if you do have to start Matt Breida against the 49ers on Thursday night. But the other one I think that's worth talking about, Craig Reynolds of the Detroit Lions. Obviously, we know David Montgomery dealing with an issue. He was at first expected to miss a few weeks, and then I saw something that he was maybe day-to-day. So what's the situation there with the Lions backfield at the moment?
Yeah, it's not entirely clear. It seems like it's probably more in the week-to-week range, and then someone else was just being more optimistic and not wanting to give out as much information, because when you say someone is day-to-day, that doesn't really tell people much of anything. So expect David Montgomery to probably miss at least a little bit of time. So I think Craig Reynolds is definitely the running back to pick up there, with Gibbs definitely not on anyone's waiver wire. So I do expect Reynolds to basically take the exact same role David Montgomery had in this past game, and that was being the primary running back, seeing the clear majority of carries. They did say before the game that Gibbs would see more playing time, and that did happen. That happened on third downs, that happened in the two-minute drill. Slightly more snaps on early down than the previous week, but not by much. So we just saw him a lot more involved in the passing game, just a little bit involved in the running game, but not as much as some fantasy managers would like. So I think we're going to see this situation. It has ended up becoming very similar to what we saw last year, with Jamal Williams seeing the vast majority of carries and DeAndre Swift being the passing down back. Now we are seeing Gibbs take over Swift's role, as we expected. We had seen Montgomery take the Jamal Williams role. Now I expect Craig Reynolds to take that Jamal Williams role, that David Montgomery role. So Reynolds is someone that I trust to have double-digit carries. It'll probably be pretty matchup-based if you're willing to put him in your starting lineup, because I don't expect Reynolds to see all that much passing work. But they had a good matchup last week, which is why the running backs did well. But it'll just depend on the schedule these next couple weeks and how long David Montgomery is out for how valuable Reynolds can be to your roster.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good call. And then just another note on the Lions backfield. I just saw this kind of come across here. It looks like Zonovan Knight was also added to the Lions 53-man roster here, formerly of the New York Jets, was a waiver wire guy last year and, you know, was useful at times. Any interest in Zonovan Knight? You think he works into the mix here?
I don't think he will. I think he'll be their third back. So if there's another injury, he'll be ready to go. I think with Craig Reynolds being with this coaching staff for the past couple of years, I think that's been enough time to build up a decent amount of trust. And he's fairly consistently been that third back. If anything, that news that Zonovan Knight's getting promoted right now and we're knowing about it on a Tuesday rather than a Friday or a Saturday, tells me that this injury is fairly serious and that he is expected to miss some time. So if anything, that just makes me more interested in Reynolds at this point.
Nice. Yeah, good call. Anybody else among the running backs that you think is worth touching on here?
I think Roshan Johnson's probably an interesting one worth talking about, just since there's a number of these running backs who are more backup / receiving running backs that have a potential to see more playing time as the season progresses. But I think Johnson, out of some of these guys, probably has the best chance to have a fairly high upside. We saw Deonta Foreman, who had been part of that three-man rotation. He was a healthy inactive, which allowed Johnson to be the primary backup on early downs as well as the passing down back. I think since Chicago has been pretty fluid about how they've used these running backs, both Johnson and Herbert see significant playing time both on early downs and passing downs, that I think if one of these running backs starts playing significantly better than the other, then that running back will start seeing a lot more playing time than the other. So I think there's a possibility, even though I think Herbert's a very good player. If Johnson breaks out in a big way, I think he has the opportunity to have a clear hold of this backfield at some point this season. So while that might not be the most likely possibility of what happens, I think his path to being a clear starter is easier than someone like Tajay Spears or even Jaylen Warren, as much as we piped up Warren. I think, if anything, that'll get closer to 50-50, but it might be a while before Warren ever overtakes that backfield, where I think it's more likely that Johnson could overtake Chicago's backfield.
Gotcha. Yep, that makes perfect sense to me. So that'll do it for the running backs, and we'll move on to the other positions here. But if there's anybody else that that you missed or you want more detail on, Nate has written them all up on the PFF waiver wire targets article up on pff.com right now, so you can go check those out as well. I do want to give a quick shout out to another sponsor here before we move on to the wide receivers, and that is our friends at DraftKings. Football is back in full swing with another week of epic games. And who's got you covered on the action for every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Nobody's missing out on the action this season. All DraftKings customers can take advantage of two new offers every game day this September. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use code PFF to sign up. New customers can bet just $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code PFF. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. See dkng.co/football for eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. All right. Wide receivers, let's talk about them. There's a few on the waiver wire here, and we'll start at the top. Tank Dell of the Houston Texans is rostered in less than 4% of ESPN leagues at the moment, so that's a big one. Tutu Atwell of the Los Angeles Rams, his percentage is going up to 30% now, but still available widely in many leagues. Jaden Reed of the Green Bay Packers at 13.4%, so let's start with those top three there, Nate, and maybe start with Tank Dell specifically. You got the Houston Texans jersey on today, repping some Tank Dell for us. So let's hear it.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, definitely intrigued by Dell at this point. I was intrigued after week one when he was substituted in significantly for both Robert Woods and for Nico Collins, considering how well Collins has been playing. Seeing Dell on the field in place of Collins for a number of snaps in week one was definitely intriguing. And now with Noah Brown on injured reserve for these next couple weeks, we saw Robert Woods move from an outside receiver to the slot receiver, which allowed Dell to become an outside receiver and play significantly. Caught 7 passes, 72 yards, and a touchdown off of 10 targets. So it was good to see them throw it to Dell so much. It was good to see him perform well on his targets. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this wide receiver group continues to evolve. I expect Dell to at least be the starter for these next couple weeks while Noah Brown is recovering from his injury. But even when he's back, it's hard for me to see them going back to Dell not seeing as much playing time. I think with how well the young wide receivers are playing, I think they added some veterans as insurance. But even Robert Woods, who was a captain on the team, I don't know how long he'll keep his job if he's not producing all that much. And John Metchie had his first NFL game, caught his first NFL catch, which was both great to see. But we could see even Metchie overtake some of these veterans as a slot receiver, in which case we have three young wide receivers to grow with their young quarterback. And I think it's intriguing to see how well they end up doing. But Dell, even with Nico Collins playing so well these past 2 weeks, I think Dell has the opportunity to end up being the top outside wide receiver over time. This is just his second NFL game that he's catching 72 yards and a touchdown. So expect him to continue to improve. So very excited to see what the ceiling is for Dell. Similar to Puka Nacua last week, Nacua was someone where it's like, we don't know what the ceiling is. The ceiling could be extremely high here. If the Texans offense starts putting things together, if CJ Stroud starts playing better, if Dell becomes the number one receiver, Dell could be one of those top 10, top 15 fantasy wide receivers going forward. So just with that kind of upside possibility, definitely looking to get Dell in as many leagues as I can today.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And in the famous words of Michael Jordan, the ceiling is the roof for Tank Dell. But yeah, I'm excited. Like we said, this passing offense, there's a ton of volume there. And I'm with you. I don't think when Noah Brown comes back that Tank Dell is going to relinquish that role in any kind of way. He's just been too good. He's looked electric with the ball in his hands. And obviously coming in and playing like he did in week two here, it is a great sign for him going forward, just as a rookie. And then Nico Collins as well. He was our highest graded wide receiver this week in receiving grade, which you also love to see. So there's potential there for that offense and these receivers. But the two guys that I'm most interested in are Tank Dell and Nico Collins for sure. So yeah, definitely go out and get some Tank Dell. How about some of these other guys? Tutu Atwell, Jaden Reed were the other two top targets that we mentioned. Do you have a preference of one over the other here?
Probably preferring Tutu Atwell. I think he's just been completely overshadowed by Puka Nacua at this point, which is why people haven't been looking his way. But Atwell put up another good game, still one of the top wide receivers in receiving yards this season, 196, which puts him in the top 10 wide receivers in receiving yards, which is great to see. I think his role is different enough from the other wide receivers that even when Cooper Kupp is back, I think Atwell can be more of the deep threat on the team, while the other two wide receivers are catching a lot more of the underneath passes. So I think Atwell can continue to have a role on this team going forward. So I think with how well the Rams offense has been doing, he could potentially be a fantasy starter over these next couple weeks. And then once Kupp is back, the only thing will be if Atwell remains a starter completely or he has to rotate in and out with Van Jefferson. Van Jefferson hasn't been producing nearly as much. Also, Tyler Higbee, someone who we talked about a bit at the beginning of the season, thought he was the clear number two option in this passing offense at that time, which shows how much we knew 2 weeks ago. But he really hasn't been doing anything either with how well these wide receivers have been doing. So definitely excited to see what Atwell can do going forward, even with Puka Nacua on the roster.
Yeah, these guys have been pretty amazing so far. And look, there's no guarantee that Cooper Kupp comes back right away in week five either, right? Like after 4 weeks on injured reserve, if that hamstring still isn't 100%, they're probably not going to rush him back, right? So especially when guys are performing like this, like Atwell and like Puka Nacua, obviously, there's no need right now to kind of rush somebody back from a injury that has a high re-injury risk. So looking at some of the other wide receivers here on the waiver wire, Josh Reynolds of the Detroit Lions rostered in just 4.4% of ESPN leagues, but you've also listed Romeo Doubs of the Green Bay Packers, 33%, Kadarius Toney of the Kansas City Chiefs up to 42%, Jonathan Mingo of the Carolina Panthers is at 15%, Rashad Bateman at 12.7%, and Rashid Shaheed of the New Orleans Saints at 24%. Also Marvin Mims at 7.5%. So a bigger list here, but we can pick out a few names to kind of go into detail with. Who do you want to start with?
I think I'll start with Bateman, just since I know we talked about a couple of these guys yesterday on the recap. And some of them, it's just we know that what they're capable of doing. But I think Bateman's intriguing with Odell Beckham getting injured in last week's game. Bateman took over as a starter once Odell Beckham went out. So it'll be interesting to see how long Beckham is out for. I think Bateman definitely intrigued by him long term, but even short term, if he ends up being a starter for this upcoming week, the Ravens have a matchup against the Indianapolis Colts, which according to our strength of schedule tool is the best matchup for wide receivers this upcoming week. So a lot of the guys that we're talking about, we're talking more long term, what they're capable of doing, even though they also should be capable of doing things this upcoming week. But if you're looking for someone specifically for this upcoming week who's available in a pretty high amount of leagues, I think Bateman's an intriguing option, specifically if Odell Beckham has to miss a game.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely targeting those Colts cornerbacks here. They're our fourth lowest coverage grade so far as teams go through 2 weeks as well. So haven't been performing well and have been a nice matchup for wide receivers. What's the next name that you want to look at here?
I can always talk about Jaden Reed some more, since Jaden Reed definitely... I've talked about him a lot over these past couple weeks with him taking over the Packers slot receiver role, but he scored 2 touchdowns in this game. His role was a little bit different in terms of his average depth of target, so it's good to see them using Reed in different ways. Also, saw a couple catches lined up on the outside, 2.24 yards per route run so far this season, and ideally the Packers just start running more plays, which means Reed is on the field more often. I know once we have Christian Watson also running routes, that might mean fewer targets for Reed, but that also means that we should probably see a lot of the coverage focused on Watson going forward, which could make Reed's life even easier in the slot. So it could be more of a benefit more than a setback for Reed. So just someone that's a rookie, it's always good to have rookies who are involved in the offense this early in the season, just to see what they can do over the second half of the season. Like 2 years ago, Amon-Ra St. Brown barely did anything over the most of the season and then blew up over the last 6 weeks or so. We saw Elijah Moore that season as well, not do much over the first 6 weeks, and then was a top fantasy wide receiver over the middle of the season before suffering an injury his rookie season. So it's guys like that, guys like Reed or Mingo, that if they have a role in the offense now, they could blow up at some point this season. So I want to have them on my bench now for when they do blow up.
I like it. Yeah, definitely enjoying getting Jaden Reed on rosters this year with that potential, because, yeah, look, Jordan Love has played well, so Jaden Reed could potentially have an even nicer rest of the year too. So Packers offense really just been super interesting to me to watch. But we'll continue here with some more wide receiver targets. Marvin Mims was a big one people were really excited about. Obviously, the big play threat as a rookie coming in here and then having this big blow-up game in week two, which came on just 2 catches. But Marvin Mims, you've put him on the list here. We talked about not starting him right away, but definitely somebody worth rostering, right?
Yeah, I think with how well he played in this game, he has with 7.6 yards per route run, which is like twice as much as any other receiver at this point, which is on a fairly small sample size, but still is a fun number to look at in any charts with him if you have the sample sizes that low. Are obviously great to see. So the big thing standing in his way is Brandon Johnson at wide receiver, so I would expect Mims to be able to overtake Johnson at some point, even appear to be the starter in the preseason over Johnson. So a little surprising that Mims is seeing this little playing time at this point, but after having those 2 catches, hopefully start seeing his playing time increase this upcoming week. And similar to the other rookies, like we were just talking about, hopefully he can blow up either in the middle of the season or late in the season. So better to have him on the roster now so you aren't fighting to try getting him after he does have another huge game.
Yeah, especially for an 0-2 team, right, that needs some kind of offensive help. Marvin Mims stands out as a pretty obvious choice to give more playing time to. But yeah, it's not there right now, so it's hard to trust, but definitely somebody to kind of stash and have as a speculative add in when those snaps kind of increase in the weeks ahead, which we do expect. Anybody else on the wide receiver waiver targets that you want to highlight here?
No, I think that pretty well covers it.
All right, let's go to the tight ends then. You have at the top here, Sam Laporta, just under 50% of ESPN leagues at 49.2% for the Lions. Zach Ertz of the Arizona Cardinals rostered in 47.2% of leagues. Chig Okonkwo of the Tennessee Titans at 35%. So we'll start with these kind of top three guys here that you've listed. Which ones of this first group here that you like the most?
We'll start with Sam Laporta, because hopefully this is the last time that we can talk about him on a Tuesday. Put together another good game for the Lions. He's up to 10 passes for 102 yards this season. Only rookie in the last 15 years to have 10 catches at this point of the season. 1.79 yards per route run, which second best for tight ends with at least 50 routes. So he's just been playing very well. The only thing is he hasn't scored a touchdown yet, where other tight ends have scored touchdowns, which brings down his fantasy production a little bit. But he just hasn't had that many opportunities. Detroit just hasn't been in the red zone all that often so far this season. So hopefully Laporta is able to score some touchdowns as the season progresses. But I think once that happens, everyone will be on him and have him on the roster in all the leagues. So he just barely qualified in terms of tight ends in general this week. Like each week, I kind of start with last week's waivers, take out all the players who don't qualify anymore, and then start figuring out things from there. But tight end this week, it was like, let's just copy over the list from last week, and it's pretty much the same list of players this week.
Yeah, yeah, I'm noticing it is the different, pretty much the same names. There is one different name on here. So you mentioned Luke Musgrave, Green Bay Packers, he's on here. Hunter Henry, he's on here. Cade Otton was the other one, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers rostered in just 1.1% of leagues. I don't think we talked too much about Cade Otton last week. So he's one here that we mentioned in the recap episode as kind of a deeper league potential play here. But Cade Otton, any interest in Cade Otton adding to rosters this week?
Yeah, I think this week is probably the first time we've ever mentioned him on the podcast so far. But in these waiver articles, I definitely try to make sure that I'm including at least some players that are available in over 90% of ESPN leagues, just because I know these rostership percentages can be a little misleading at times. I think a lot of them are based on 10 team leagues, and plenty of people listening are playing in 12 team leagues or more. So I know a number of the players that we talk about at times might not apply to your league, but try to include some players that hopefully are applying to your league. And I think Cade Otton definitely fits that category. Caught all six of his passes for 41 yards for the Buccaneers. He's basically their third best receiving option at this point. A distant third behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, but still the third option in an offense that is playing better than we expected. He's the clear receiving tight end for the team, seeing the vast majority of offensive snaps. So he has the role that's needed to be a fantasy starting tight end. I don't know if he has the talent quite yet to be there, but he is seeing enough targets to at least be worth considering. So if you are in one of those deeper leagues where Sam Laporta is definitely gone, Hunter Henry is gone, even Luke Musgrave is gone, then Cade Otton is probably the best player available on your waiver wire among the tight ends.
All right, there we go. Some Cade Otton love. Anybody else in the tight ends that you worth talking about, or should we wrap her up here?
I think the only thing worth mentioning is Hunter Henry is on this list because he did have another good performance. Typically, if I'm adding someone to the waiver wire list, I'm almost always saying positive things about them. But with Henry, I do think it's worth being at least a little cautious about him. New England has just run a ton of pass plays so far this season. So that's part of the reason that Henry has been so successful. Mike Gesicki has seen some playing time and has played pretty well in his playing time. So there's a chance that not only will the Patriots run fewer pass plays going forward, but Henry might also see a slight decline in his amount of playing time. Only has a 15.3% target rate and only 1.27 yards per route run. Those are respectable numbers, but they aren't necessarily great tight end one numbers. So Henry, based on these last two games, it's definitely worth adding him to see if he can continue to play this well going forward. But I'm not as optimistic as his box score stats show so far.
All right. So something to think about there for sure. And yeah, now makes it tougher for me to consider Hunter Henry over Kyle Pitts in a lot of leagues. That's another thing to kind of consider here as we go forward, just making it tougher on the world, but definitely good to know. But that's going to do it for the waiver wire targets heading into week 3. Go get those waiver claims in. Stay on top of who is available in your fantasy leagues. Even pay attention to who managers drop at this point in the season, because there could be some gold laying around that we did not cover today. But that'll be it for the fantasy football portion of the pod today. Nate and I are going to do our 5-round battle draft of random nonsense here. Going in a little bit because we enjoy it. It adds a little bit more fun to the pod, which I think, you know, we could all use a little more of in life. So last week we drafted the top 5 MCU characters to star in a movie. I picked up the win on that one. So Nate, you're getting the first overall pick here as we come back to the color well, drafting the best yellow characters. So characters who are associated with the color yellow. We've done blue, green, red already. I'm undefeated on the character colors, Nate. So you got to come out swinging here with the first overall pick. Who do you got?
So I do think there are a clear two options that I probably should be considering, but I know if I don't draft either of them, I'll still be able to get one of them in the second round. And I can't let you get Wolverine, so I'm going to get Wolverine with the first pick. There's just not all that many comic book characters that I feel like are associated too much with the color yellow, but I think he is the clear one that, even though he hasn't been that in the movies yet, but he will be soon. So I think getting Wolverine first, because I know how much our voters like these comic book characters, and Wolverine, I can't let you have him.
Yeah, no, you know me too well. That would have absolutely been my top pick here. All right, so I guess for me, I'm going to go with, for my first overall pick, I'm going Homer Simpson. The Simpsons, the entire cast is yellow, so it's hard to pick one, but I feel like Homer Simpson is the clear kind of 101 from that universe there. So that's going to be my first pick.
There, I definitely had him in my top five. I was kind of hoping that you would go with a character geared towards a younger audience, so I wouldn't have to pick between these two characters, but I think I'll go with SpongeBob SquarePants. I think, I know I picked a SpongeBob character before and it didn't go well, but I think out of all the characters that are associated with the color yellow, that's actually the color yellow. I'll go with SpongeBob.
Yeah, good call. Good call. SpongeBob was on my list for sure. The other one, I mean, you mentioned like kids' characters and stuff. So I'm gonna go with the Pokemon that pretty much everybody associates with Pokemon, and it's Pikachu, the most beloved Pokemon character, I think, and he was the most popular one. So hopefully that gets votes here with Pikachu.
Yeah, that was definitely the other one that I was considering there. So like I spent at least 3 minutes researching online to come up with the list, and someone that I didn't necessarily think of, but he was consistently coming up high on the list, and it sort of makes sense. Winnie the Pooh. I don't think he's like the traditional bright yellow character, but I still think he qualifies for the color yellow. So I think in terms of the history of yellow characters, he's fairly high on the list.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good call. Winnie the Pooh is a good one. I did see him on there. I don't think I put him on my list, but yeah, it's actually a pretty good call. All right, let's go with my next pick here. I'm gonna go with Wario from the Super Mario games. Yeah. he's essentially Mario, but yellow and purple, but mostly yellow, which is the main thing. He's the evil version of Mario. I feel like most people know who Wario is at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I feel like with yellow characters, they don't make many yellow characters anymore. Like everyone that I was thinking of are like all these characters, plenty of them from like before I was born. So I think I'm going to go with Charlie Brown for the next one. I think his yellow shirt, that's associated with him, and probably at least in the history of cartoon characters, he's fairly high on the list. So I think Charlie Brown. That different from the people that I've had so far. So I don't know how much of an audience that we have that is also a Charlie Brown audience, but I still think he is deserving of being one of the top characters of all time associated with the color yellow.
Nice. Yeah. There should be enough people who know who Charlie Brown is and enough Peanuts fans out there that you get some votes for Charlie Brown. I'll go old school as well. I'll go with Tweety Bird from the Looney Tunes cartoons. Tweety Bird was always kind of a fun character for, you know, the cartoon I don't know. I don't have much to say about Tweety Bird. It's been a long time since I've watched the Looney Tunes, but I gotta go with that for yellow.
I did have Tweety on my list, so
okay.
This is what my fourth round pick at this point. I think this is the last one. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'll go with Big Bird then. Oh, I think out of all the characters that are yellow and not just associated with the character yellow, I want to try to make sure that I get at least a couple characters on the list that are just completely yellow. And I don't think I can pick all of the minions, and I don't think there is a single particular minion that makes sense to pick, even though like every time that we do these character colors, it's like, okay, there are all of these characters, there are all of the Smurfs that are blue, there's all of the Ninja Turtles that are green, that it's hard to pick one of them. So I'm going to let Minions probably go undrafted, and I'll go with Big Bird.
Yeah, I had minions on here just as like a last resort, and I don't know any of their names. I think there's a Bob, so I would have said like Bob or something if you made me choose like a specific one, but I don't know enough about the minions to put them on my list here for the last pick. So I'm going to go because I haven't been able to put a comic book character on here yet. So I do have one, and I'm going with Sinestro, the leader of the Sinestro Corps. Obviously, it's a Yellow Lantern ring, so a Green Lantern villain there. But Sinestro, one of my favorites as far as villains go in the DC universe. So I am going to add Sinestro to my list here. So that brings us to you having Wolverine, SpongeBob, Winnie the Pooh, Charlie Brown, and Big Bird. And I have Homer Simpson, Pikachu, Wario, Tweety Bird, and Sinestro. So we'll put that out today in the poll, but that is going to do it for us on this Tuesday. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to the PFF Fantasy YouTube channel. That helps us a lot so we can continue to help you. We greatly appreciate that. Nate, thank you for going all through all these waiver names with me. Before you go, please let everyone know what you have going up on PFF.com this week, because we won't see you until you and Gordon do the Start Sit Show on Sunday.
Yep. So today we had the five to add, five to drop, five to buy low, five to sell high go up. But we'll have the rest of the season rankings. I know they're typically up by this point, but I think going forward, we'll start to have them go up a little bit later in the middle of the day on a Tuesday, especially with the injuries we've had on Monday Night Football. Being able to account for those in the rest of the season rankings, I think, is important. And since most of the people need that in the afternoon and evening, that's what we'll do with rest of season rankings going forward. We'll also have my upcoming week rankings. They will be up in our products later today, but also in article form tomorrow. And then Thursday will be start set article, as well as the Thursday night recap.
Awesome. Beautiful. Go check that out. As for me, I'll have the IDP fantasy report up on the website today with all the snaps and utilization from every defensive player from this past week, which includes IDP waiver wire targets. So speaking of waiver wires, we got the IDP ones in that article as well. Be sure to check that out. I'll also have the wide receiver versus man and zone coverage report out this week, IDP rankings, O-line, D-line matchups to target and avoid. Those will all be up by Friday. I'll be back tomorrow for the IDP week 3 preview show, and then Kate and I will be previewing the offensive side of the ball for week 3 on Thursday. So be sure to tune into both of those episodes. Thank you all for listening, and until next time, peace out. We'll be right back.